As many of you know, I went down last year to the country of Argentina and Chile, and I was preaching down there. And this year, I went down to Argentina and spent most of my time there, and also went over to the neighboring country of Uruguay. And I'll tell you a little bit about all those. So I don't know how many of you were here for the last report I did over Argentina, but if you don't know where Argentina is, you can see on the map there, it's highlighted in red, so it stands out very obviously. It's very, very far away in the south, in South America, southern South America. When I went down, I left Indianapolis, and I flew to Dallas, which is a couple-hour flight, and then from Dallas, you take an overnight flight down to Buenos Aires, which is about a 10.5-hour flight. It's extremely far. If you were going east to west, you could make it to the Middle East. So it's a lot more farther, and it's deceiving when you're just looking north and south, but it's the entire world, north and south. So this is where I first went. I went to Argentina. And this is kind of a zoomed-in version of the country. And I put two yellow dots. Well, I landed in Buenos Aires, as you can see, which is on the coast. It's a very large city. I don't know if you remember from last time. It has a metropolitan population of about 14 million people. So we're talking about L.A. here. It's very, very large. And to cross it from one side to the other, it's about 4 hours. And altogether, there's seven churches, but we'll get to that here in a minute. It's a very large city, and the churches all there are quite small. But I landed there, and a few days after landing, we went up to Rosario, which you can see is the next yellow dot up the river a little bit. Rosario is a very large city. It's the fourth largest city. Actually, no, excuse me. It's the third largest city in Argentina. It's probably got 2 or 3 million people, so it's bigger than Indianapolis. It's quite large as well. And we went up there with, I call them my two amigos. They're David Rodriguez, who also receives support from this congregation, who does an absolutely fantastic job in Argentina. I can't say enough good things about him. And Jorge Trocha. Jorge Trocha lives in Buenos Aires, in the capital, and David lives in the middle of the country in Villa Mercedes, which I'll show you later here on the map. And so David traveled from his hometown to meet us in Rosario. For us, from Buenos Aires, it was only about a 3-hour trip. And we traveled up there to meet because we had heard that there was a congregation up there that was looking for truth, we say. And a lot of other brethren had said, no, those are a bunch of liberals up there. You shouldn't go up there and study with them. Well, you just got to be really careful with that mentality because we went up there and that wasn't the case at all. So that's something I learned, no? But this is Rosario. It's a very, very large city. For only 2 or 3 million people, they have a lot of skyscrapers. It's a very, very compact city. And the church and the people who attend the church live outside, kind of in the slums. This is the nice part of town. We were open. We had studies in the afternoon and meetings at night, kind of a gospel meeting type deal with two of us preaching each night. So during the morning, we could actually go out and see a little bit. And this is apparently the place where the Argentinian flag or the Argentine flag was first conceived or built. So that was kind of neat. But just to kind of give you an overview of how big this city is, there's a lot of people we could reach there. This is one of the studies we did with some of the members. The man sitting at the end of the table in the red shirt, his name is Sergio. And he is a young son, and his father on this end in the white shirt, his name is Raul. And then, of course, you have David sitting on that side, myself. And the man sitting with kind of the black coat, his name is Jesus Oriche. And he is the preacher there in Rosario normally when we're not there. But we went, they invited us to come. And we had lots and lots of Bible studies during the day. And then normally two of us preached every night. So I believe the first two nights, myself and one of the others preached. And then Saturday night, I think I had the night off and they both preached. And then Sunday, which you'll see here in a second, we all preached. But here is part of the group. You have Jesus and his wife who's standing in the middle. And you have David. And we had another member who had actually, a visitor who had been coming. And we had several discussions with him over revelations, and he wanted to talk about the kingdom and what was the kingdom and had some misunderstandings about that. But they are literally meeting in the front part of their house. We talk about a lot of the blessings we have in the United States to have a building like this, to have the resources to teach Bible classes. You know, we took these people's songbooks. You know, it's just amazing how blessed we are in this country. And obviously it's a big responsibility that we need to take that to other places. But they were just absolutely thrilled to have us. Again, this is kind of like the front part of their house, so I guess you could open it up, kind of use it as a garage. But this is where they meet, you know, and all that projector, the computer stuff, we brought that. They don't have any of that. However, they do what they can. They have a radio program. Jesus, every couple of days, sometimes every day, depending on how open the radio station is, he goes in. It doesn't cost a lot of money. He can rent the radio station out, for 2 hours and just preach. So we went in on a Saturday, I believe it was, and we preached for 2 hours. And you're thinking, 2 hours, that's a lot of time. But when you're in there and it's a live program and people can send messages in with questions, and we actually got about 14 messages. People will text in and say, yeah, I'm listening, you guys are doing a great job, stuff like that. And so, you know, if 14 people actually took the time to send a message in, you know, there's a lot more that are listening. So that's extremely encouraging. So we were there, and, you know, I guess I can say now I've been on the radio. I never thought I'd be on the radio in a foreign country before my own country, but that's the way it ended up working out. And it was a good program. We talked about a lot of different things that the Pentecostals are extremely strong in Argentina, and so a lot of people talk about miracles, and tithing is huge. I had no idea before this trip that tithing was such an issue. So you learn all about tithing, and you have churches that teach you should tithe every day, 10% of this. On Monday, we're going to have you know, a collection for the widows. On Tuesday, we're going to have a collection for the young people. On Wednesday, we're going to have a collection for the young married people. And then, you know, Thursday's for orphans. And they just collect money, and literally, it's fraud. It's literally legal fraud is what goes on in this country. And people look at this and they say, you know, this can't be right. And they start reading over it, you know, because a lot of Pentecostals use Malachi, you know, 3, talking about, you know, bring your offerings to the Alpha Lee. And they refer to that as the bag where you got to put your money. So there's a lot of corrupt Pentecostal people there who are just trying to get money. And when people literally look in the Bible and see what that's talking about, they're like, oh, you know, that's not what it's talking about at all. And they start to study the Bible, and then they become interested. So we meet a lot of people like that. And this was the person who allowed us to come in. I think she's of Asian descent. I don't know if it's Malaysia, but she was kind enough to allow us because, I mean, it is their station. They can choose who they can rent it out to, you know. And then this was one of our Sunday meetings. I don't know if you can see the lady sitting right by the window, but she drives very, very far away from another town on a moped. And every Sunday she drives. And it's really impressive what other people go through. And, you know, that we just take for granted. We have a car. You know, most people either walk or this lady had a moped, but she still had to go an extreme distance. So it's amazing. It's something to reflect on. All right, from there, we stayed there, like I said, about 5 days, more or less a week, and we had a very successful meeting there and really encouraged a small group of brethren there. And then from there, we went to Rio Cuarto, where we have several contacts, several families of contacts. There's not a church there yet. However, there is the sister of Jesus Orige, which was the preacher there. His sister lives there, and she is a Christian. But they don't have a lot of biblical knowledge yet. They're still learning. They're still growing slowly. So we went to there, where the yellow dot is in the center of the country, which is closer to where David lives. And I only have one picture here, because during a lot of these studies, it's just not convenient just to take out your camera. Here, let's just take a picture, because you're really focused on the Word. I really like to take more pictures, and a lot of the pictures that I have here were taken by other people. So, but this is one of the pictures we took. There's David in the middle, and the guy on the right, his name is Jose, and he's one of the families who we have contact with based on, like, their family members that live in Buenos Aires. So a lot of people, what happens is they obey the truth, and then they want their family, obviously. They want their family to come to know the truth. So they say, you know, I have a brother, or I have a sister, or I have a son or daughter in such and such city. Could you go and talk to them? You know, it could be 10 hours away. You know, this place was, I guess, about 8 hours away from where I landed, so we had to travel a long way on buses to get there. But we had several good studies. We stayed here for, I think, 2 days. And we had 2 studies with this family, 2 studies with the Christian woman who's there, and then another study with a man named Miguel, who he's coming to the knowledge of the truth. He's an electrician, and like my dad, so that's how I remember that. And he continues to study, continues to stay interested. He still needs to make that decision. You know, you can tell them the importance of obeying the gospel, but still, in the end, they have to make that decision. And that's, you know, sometimes you just want to just make the decision, but that's not our place. You know, our place is to be patient, to be loving, present the word how it is, plant the seed. You know, others can water it, but God in the end is going to give the increase. So you just have to be patient and learn about that. And also, these people had some friends, some young people who had just been married, I think maybe a year. They came to us for marriage counseling. And a lot of people, especially in Argentina, they don't view preachers as some religious person. They view you kind of as a counselor. And obviously, our job is not counselors. But if somebody wants to come to us with problems, guess how we're going to answer them? We're going to talk about the true counselor, you know, the person who has advice, God, you know, for every spiritual matter. So they came in and we talked about the Bible during the whole time. And they really liked it. And they had agreed to meet with us again, but we had already bought our tickets and we had to go. So we planned to come back later. And from there, we went over to where the yellow dot is now, which is Villa Mercedes. This is where David lives, in the province of San Luis, which is in the middle of the country. Lots of farmland out there. And this is where we had even more success. We were moving the whole time, and he keeps getting calls from home saying, you need to come back. There's people here who are interested. So we were really, really stretched thin. But I was just so thankful to have David and Jorge, because we worked really good as a group of three. I mean, it was like Paul and Barnabas, and I was obviously Timothy, you know. And they were always fighting who's going to be Paul and who's going to be Barnabas. I'm like, I'll be Timothy, you know. That's pretty obvious who I am. And so one of them's like, you can be Paul. I don't have to be Paul. So, but anyway, it was really good, and I like the application there, because a lot of people think when you're doing personal evangelism, you have to get out there and you have to do it all by yourself. And I don't think that's the case at all. I think take somebody with you. If you don't know it all, that's okay. You can continue studying. Take somebody who knows a little bit more. That's perfectly fine. I learned so much by just listening to these guys and then throwing in my two cents, and you learn how ideas work together. And he'll be making a point, and I'll be thinking of something else, and then I'll say my point, and while I'm saying my point, David will be thinking of another point. And it just works really well together, and if I don't know the answer to something, he will, and it just works really good, a group atmosphere. I think a lot of times in the Bible, you see people going out in twos and threes. I think there's a lot of wisdom in that. You know, they have a greater return on their work. And if one falls down, the other can pick them up. You know, those are biblical wisdom from the Bible. So that was important. So we got back, and one of David's friends, I don't know if it was from high school, but a long time ago, Natalia, who is sitting towards us on the right where the date is, she had been interested, and so they had been doing studies, and she brought her sister. Then again, you're going to see people bringing their families, who's sitting at the end, and her husband, Javier, Karina and Javier, and we started studying. And this was the first time I ever encountered people who were having dreams. And so you learn these people were having dreams. They thought they were having spiritual dreams, and this was happening, and even some of the things they dreamed happened, just the way they were big into miracles and Pentecostalism. And we were talking about that, and the first thing we had to do was establish biblical authority. You know? And we were talking about, well, you know, a dream or an angel or anybody can say whatever it is, but in the end, does it agree with the Bible? Because if it doesn't agree with the Bible, it's supposed to be a curse. It's supposed to be thrown out. It's not useful. And so they actually picked up on this quite rapidly, faster than I thought. But we would study for hours and hours on end. We would start a study at 7 p.m., and we would run till midnight. We might run till 1 a.m. It was unbelievable, the enthusiasm and that they had to learn and grow. So we kept studying with them over several times, and you know, you have a lot of reoccurring theme. The next time they come back, they want to discuss the same thing. All right, we may not have explained it well enough the first time. Be patient, cover it again. They're going to learn, okay? So we start with that. Meanwhile, I also gave young people studies. This is one of the things that I had already planned going into it that I wanted to do differently this time. Last time I went down, I kind of got to know people, got to know the churches. I did some preaching last time. But this time, we did a lot more home Bible studies, which I personally like better. Because with preaching, it's hard to relate to everybody. You're trying to relate to everybody, but it's harder because you have so many different groups you're trying to address. But when you're in a home Bible study, you can communicate directly with that person. You can see what it is they're thinking, and then you can better address their needs using the Bible. And so I wanted to do a lot of home Bible studies. I did young people studies. We talked about all kinds of things that relate to young people, from, I don't know, you know, drugs and alcohol, to who you're going to date, to other things like that. And also, a year or two ago, I had taught evidences Bible class up at Purdue for the Christians there, talking about different things based on my major, biomedical engineering, and they were fascinated by that. They wanted to learn about evolution or how abortion really is and all the scientific stuff. So we covered, I think we had four or five classes, and I was only there during, you know, 2 weeks when we could get together. But they really enjoyed that, and that seemed to be pretty profitable for them. All right, and then there's me preaching in their small building, which again is their garage, you know. I was telling them one day, it was kind of comical. He was asking about the building here, and I said, yeah, we have, you know, 200-300 members, and, you know, their mouths just drop open, their eyes get real big, and they can't even imagine it. And then we have one hallway with all these Bible classes, and then we have another hallway with all these Bible classes, and then we have a room just for the teachers to prepare studies, and they can't believe it. And he was joking one day, he's like, all right, I want to explain my building, and he just draws one square, and he's like, all right, this is our main salon, this is our main room, and he went on from there. And he says, if you want to get to the baptistry, you just walk outside, go 5 blocks, and you've got a river. So, but it was very interesting. But, you know, then again, we just have to think about all we have and how we need to manage that well and be good stewards and use just all the blessings we have. But they do have a little hymnal board, so you can see some things don't change. As you can see, later on, the church has grown quite a bit from last year. David's been able to have a lot of success. Well, God's really had the success. But he's been using David, and all those people who we were studying with, later there were 6 of them, including his daughter, who were baptized. Now, I wasn't there for that. I would have loved to have been. I think I had 5 or 6 studies with him personally, and then at the beginning of June, I had to go back to Buenos Aires, but I received the good news. They told me over the phone or sent me a text message that they had been baptized, and I was just extremely happy about that. So they almost probably doubled their number. Those families, Karina and Javier, they have several children that'll be bringing, so they'll be able to do children's classes. And not even everybody who's there is in this picture, which is really exciting. And here's some of the baptisms. They had to fill a pool. And remember, it was summer here, so it's winter down there. So just keep that in mind. The Argentine winter is nice. I guess it would be like Florida. I've never been to Florida during the winter, but a lot of people go there. So I assume it's got to be a pretty nice place. I assume it'd be pretty much like Argentina. It gets up into the 60s every day. It's really nice. No snow ever. It's quite nice. But still, they have to do these baptisms in a pool outside. And here they are. And again, I believe this is Javier or Karina's mother in the middle in the blue sweatshirt. And she's still not a Christian, but she's been coming. Because it's interesting, because when people start changing their lives, when people start taking an interest in God's Word, start attending these things and start being dedicated to something, people in your life are going to take notice. They're going to say, there's something different about this person. And they're going to ask, and usually the people are so excited they want to tell everybody. And one of the big, not a problem, but they want to tell everybody, and then people start asking them questions. Well, what about this? Or what about this doctrinal matter? And they don't know. But they're so energetic. They have so much zeal for God. They want to teach. They want to convert everybody. They want everybody to be saved. And that's such great zeal, but they still have to grow in knowledge. So, you know, you have to slow down. We're going to continue studying this. But it is extremely encouraging. And this, again, it's his oldest daughter who finally made the decision to be baptized. I know that was a great joy for him. But all this happened on the same day after I was in Buenos Aires. So I went back to Buenos Aires, which is about an 8-hour bus ride overnight, back to Buenos Aires. Big, big city. I actually stayed in, I don't know if you can see the white outline of a box. If you look at the top left corner, right outside it, you see a town called Pilar. It's part of the metropolitan area, the city. You go from one end to the other, and it never ends. I mean, it's all very, very urban. But Pilar is part of Buenos Aires. It's got about 350,000 people in it. So it's huge, and even though it's in the suburbs, you know. And that's where I stayed. That's where I actually rented an apartment. And we went to different places in Buenos Aires to preach. And one place I want you to kind of look at is if you look at the white square, at the middle part on the left, you're going to see a place called Merlo. All right, and that's where we actually established a church, which we'll get to here in just a second. Right, I don't know if this is showing up. But right below the big part that says Marón, you'll see the part of Merlo, which is part of Buenos Aires. And we were able to actually, we had some contacts there who had been asking us to come. They had seen stuff on the internet. They had been reading articles of people like Wayne Partain or Bill Reeves, who are Americans that live, actually Wayne Partain now lives in South Carolina, but he used to live in Texas, do a great amount of work, a lot of translations, tons of biblical material, because there's tons of biblical material in English. People in Spanish don't have half that material, you know, and thanks to people like these, we're starting to get more and more material, and now there's starting to be more, but still, these people are seeing stuff, their materials or their books and online, and they become interested, and they literally learn just because they're searching, you know. So, and they wanted us to come visit them. So here are some studies that we did when I was back in Buenos Aires. We studied with Luis and Olga. They're a family there in Derqui, which is part of Buenos Aires. And they it was interesting because Olga came from a background, she thought she was a prophetess. Okay, so you're going to see a lot of crazy things. But she had a very good attitude. Her attitude was she was wanting just to serve God. She just wanted to serve God. She didn't want any credit for it. But people started coming to her and kind of elevating her as a very elevated position. Oh, you're a prophetess. And she was thinking, this isn't right. You know, I'm just a servant of God. So, you know, she was very willing to study with us and see really what it was that the Bible says. And obviously one of the things that was difficult for her was seeing that women in the New Testament couldn't preach, but there's so many other things they could do. But we're still studying with her. And the Castillo family is a contact that we made through them. What was interesting is Luis was telling us, had you guys met with the Señor Castillo? I don't remember his first name. And we said, no, who is he? And he's like, well, he's a guy who knows so much about the Bible, he doesn't attend anywhere because he hasn't found any place that actually follows the biblical pattern. And we're like, where is this guy at, you know? And it's like, this is the kind of person we're looking for. So we were able to go out and meet at his house. They invited us to their house, which is outside the city on a farm. And it was nice. We just sat down at a table outside, and we were studying. We studied for a few hours. Again, they have some views that are kind of miraculous, we say. But they've been studying with them, and they're still open to studies in the future. And then studies with Jose. Jose is a member of the church. He's a guy who has extreme pain in his back. I mean, he's had several surgeries on his lumbar spine. He's got, you know, disc. Everything's out of place. He has a severe amount of pain. He can't work a lot of time. I know he was on welfare. He couldn't move or work hardly, but he loves to talk about God. He loves to study the Bible, and he even preached while I was there. When one of the other preachers couldn't preach, he stepped up and did a really excellent job. He's a new Christian, but he's growing very quickly. He used to be, I believe, a Jehovah's Witness, and then he learned the truth by just reading the Bible. And I did more young people studies. Some of the themes we covered were the same that I used out in Villa Mercedes. I preached in four different parts of Buenos Aires. All those are in Buenos Aires. They're like little suburbs. Bulogne, Derqui, Pilar is where I was staying in Cascajares. I preached two times in Bulogne. And then we obviously did studies in Merlo, which I showed you guys on the map, with Veronica, Pamela, Juan, Thomas, Fernando, and Brian. And these people were all baptized. These were the people who found it. Looking on the internet, they found a lot of material. So this is really two families. Juan in the back, his name is Juan Carlos, and he is a federal police officer in Argentina. So I don't know, his schedule varies quite a bit. Sometimes he works during the day, sometimes he works during the night. And at first he was a little apprehensive to study with us because he was thinking, oh, I carry a gun, you know. And both of these families came from the background of, I don't want to say a cult, but an extremely, extremely strict sect that talked about, you know, anything that's red comes from the devil. You can't drink water out of a red thermos. That's from the devil. You know, women, you know, can't wear pants. You can't drive in cars. You can't watch football. You can't do anything, you know. It's just extremely, you know, rules. And they're saying, you know, where do you find this in the Bible? And again, it came back to they were trying to make collections for everything. And they were looking at tithing, and they're like, even if we were following the Old Testament, that's not how the Old Testament says we should be giving. And so they kind of came to that conclusion too and wanted to study more about that. So, and they had already studied quite a bit on their own, which was nice. We got there the first day and we just studied with the two women, Pamela and Veronica, and it was just straight out of Acts. After the first day, they wanted to be baptized. We're like, wow, you know, we normally don't get this reaction. And we said, okay, well, is there some place? The next problem is, where are we going to find water? Okay. Is there any rivers? No, no rivers. Okay. Is there a pool? Like, no, there's not a pool, but we might be able to get one. Okay. All right. We maybe get a pool. So we couldn't do it that day. We came back, I think, the day after or 2 days after. They said they were going to try to get a pool because there was a river, but it was far away and extremely polluted. I mean, nobody even bathes in it. I mean, if you touch it, who knows what's going to happen to you? The water is that bad. So we came back later, and they had filled a pool. And this was impressive. This was almost like part of their confession in itself, that they had a hose that had broken, and they had spent hours and hours, literally all night, filling it with a single, not even a bucket, like a container from the kitchen. just filling it up over, carrying it over to the pool, and who knows how many hundreds of gallons you would have to fill just to get it up to the height that you need to actually submerge somebody. But I think I have a picture of this. This is me with some of the kids. The two boys to my right, or to the left on the picture, and little Thomas, I think he's 11 or 12, they were all baptized. They all understood what we were teaching. They were listening attentively, following in their Bibles. It was really quite impressive. All the children, extremely impressive. They were extremely respectful. They weren't being distracting during the studies. You could tell there was already some good parenting going on before we were even there. Great kids, Fernando, Brian, Thomas. Nahuel is the little girl. And I think that's one of their cousins who came just on one day. I didn't get his name. But all right, so here is the pool. And they had filled it all night. And after we got there, you know, we were trying to check how deep it was. And we still had, I think we were there another 2 hours just trying to get it up a little farther. So, it's extremely, extremely cold because we're in winter. But we did get it up to the correct height. And I actually got to baptize people for the first time. That's kind of neat. Not that it has anything to do with the person baptizing, but that was just a cool experience for me. Again, these people are being added to the Lord's church, not Nathan or Paul's or Apollos's. You know, it's all about the Lord's church. But that is very cool. And the kids always look up to you as an older, I guess, teenager. I guess I'm not a teenager anymore. Somebody who's fairly young, who they can relate to better. They look up to you and they ask you all kinds of questions. So that's kind of cool to be a role model for them. And then here are just some pictures of some studies we did in Buenos Aires. In the top left picture, you have myself and Thomas, who's another guy about my age who goes to church in Derqui. In the middle picture, you have Johnny, which you might remember from last year. He's probably my best friend down there. He's a great guy. He's helped me. He always picks me up from the airport and takes me back. His dad took me back this time, but excellent guy, always there. Lived right across the street from where I was renting. Vanessa Throsha, which is another girl who goes to church there. And then in the top right, a person who's not a Christian, just one of the neighbors who had been invited and decided to come. We tried to have a good effect on her. Her name is Mariana, and she's got several kids, and I tried to spend a lot of time. I went over to her house several times and talked with them. Seemed to be having a good effect on them, so we'll see in the future. And then in the bottom, you have, on the right, you have Damaris, which is the person I actually rented from. She used to live in California. I think she's the only person I know in Argentina who speaks English. They actually played a pretty mean joke on me. I got a call one night before a Bible class, and I answered my phone, and it was a number I didn't know, and the person starts talking in English. And she says, is this Nathan Pepper? And immediately, you know, I stand up, this person speaking English to me, you know, what's up? And I'm like, yes. And she's like, are you still in the Buenos Aires area? I say, yes. And she's like, sir, there seems to be a problem with your passport. I said, what? She's like, what sort of problem? And she's like, it seems that it's expired. I'm like, no, this is impossible. It's good for 10 years. And she's like, you're going to have to come in. I'm like, and I was starting to get angry, and then she told me who it was, and I couldn't believe it, because I had never heard her speak English before until that point. So, in the middle is Esram, her fiancé. He tells me he had nothing to do with it. I still don't believe him. And then on the left is Cecia, another girl who goes to church there at Defi. All great people. They came to, I think we had another 4 or 5 classes there in Buenos Aires. Okay? And then from there, I had planned and talked with a preacher over in Rivera, which I told you about last time, was a church that was just established about a year ago. And I was going to cross over to the country of Uruguay from Argentina. Excuse me. So you see Buenos Aires here on the left. Across that water, they call it the river, the widest river in the world. I don't know if you could really call it a river, but they claim to have the widest river in the world there. And they call it Rio de la Plata. You cross that, and once you cross over to the other side, you're in the small country of Uruguay. And I cross right over to that point that says Colonia de Sacramento, and that's about 3 hours to cross that river. So it's not a small river. You can't see across it. And I think we left at midnight and got there at 2 or 3 a.m., and then I had to take another two-hour bus to the capital of Montevideo in the country of Uruguay. Now, Uruguay is very similar to Argentina in many aspects. It shares the same Spanish language, a ton of Italian culture. I mean, they still talk with a very Italian accent. They eat pizza. They're very familiar. They drink mate, which is that herbal tea, but they don't share it there. They're more personal. It's an extremely small country. It only has 3 million people compared to Argentina that has, you know, 40 million in total and 14 million in Buenos Aires. So you're talking about a country whose total population is less than, you know, half the state of Indiana. It's not very big, and the size of the country is about the state of Washington. So it's a lot of land for very small people. But the attitude of many of the people there, they're farmers, they're usually very, you know, they're very humble, they're usually very willing and accepting to talk about God. I think it's a place where we could have a lot of success in the future. There's really only one church in the country up in Rivera. I think I have another. Here we go. So you, on the left, you see Argentina and you see Brazil, and nestled in between is the small country of Uruguay, which is kind of in yellow-white. And on the right, you see a closer-up version. You can see Montevideo, the capital, is on the very, very bottom. And I had to go there when I crossed over. And then from there, you take a bus all the way across the country to the very northern part where it says Rivera. And that's about a six-hour trip on a bus. It's not too bad. And that is right on the border with Brazil. And that is where the only church in the whole country is. And they had invited me to come and be very, very busy at this church. They said, yeah, we'll set you up with a meeting. You can come talk on the radio and you can do all these different things. And I'm like, oh, okay. You know, get prepared up and ready for this. But it was good for me. I really enjoyed it. People were super nice. So even though it's winter down there, when you get up to Brazil, right on the border with Uruguay and Brazil, it's hot. I think I got up there in wintertime, it was almost 80 degrees. I'm like, whoa, I need to take this sweatshirt off, you know. Very, very different change in climate. And when you're crossing over, you see lots of plains, lots of rolling hills. They have a whole lot of livestock. I think for 3 million people, they have 12 million head of cattle, 12 million head of sheep. They're a huge exporter in certain crops, so they produce a lot for a small country, and they have a lot less crime and a lot less corruption than Argentina, which is nice. All right, so I get up to Rivera. Let's see if I can. There we go. And like I said, it was on the border. This is kind of a cool picture. I was standing in the plaza, and one side of the plaza, you have Uruguay, and on the other side, on the left side in that picture, you have Brazil. And actually, in that picture on the right, I'm actually standing on the border, so my right foot would be in Uruguay, and my left is in Brazil. Normally, you need a visa to get into Brazil, but this is a city with an open border, and so you can cross. There's no immigrations until you actually leave the city. If you want to go farther into Brazil, then they'll check your visa. But just in the city, you just cross one street to the other, and you're in a different country. It's kind of pretty cool. So I literally walked across the border from where I was staying at a hotel. It's kind of nice. And this is Gustavo Alzo. He was one of the 12 original members of this congregation. I think of those 12 original members, he's maybe only one of two left. But he has taken on the role of preaching here, and he does a really good job. He has a lot of material compiled that he uses. Really super nice guy. He's a teacher and an artist. He sells artists. He doesn't sell artists. He sells paintings in Europe and stuff like that. He's met the last three presidents. He's apparently got political ties. It tells me he can get me into the country if I want to come down and preach. So I don't know. I'll have to think into that. But super nice guy. He also teaches art and computer technology. So in the morning, sometimes he'll go over to Brazil. He speaks Portuguese. So you have to realize, from one street to the other, Brazil speaks Portuguese and Uruguay speaks Spanish. So I guess I'm going to have to learn some Portuguese too. But you go from one side to the other, and it just changes. So he goes in the morning and teaches in a Brazilian school, and then comes back in the afternoon and has class in Uruguay and speaks Spanish. So it's pretty interesting. We have some of the members that were there speak both languages. We also went and spoke in the radio while we were there. He doesn't normally do this, but he knows a guy, and the guy who normally who owns this radio station is Pentecostal, but he allows us to come in, and I think I have a picture of him right here. Really nice guy. He had some really good approaches to things. He realized that in a lot of places, a lot of preachers, they're just in it for the money. They're not in it to go out, especially in that area of the world. And he is very, very vehemently against people who are just using the gospel as a means of profit. He thinks you should be able to maybe work a second job and preach, and every single person should be, you know, working. So he's got some ideas that are good, and he always listens to whatever we say. He allows us to come in for free. He doesn't even charge us when the radio's not in use, which just happened to be when I was there. It was nice. We worked us in. He's like, yeah, you can come in at this time. And I think we went at like 10 or 11 a.m. in the morning, right around noon. And super nice guy, listens to what we say, sometimes even adds in points, you know. And he had some good points. I was very appreciative to him for letting us do that. And here's the congregation, or part of it. Not all of them were there. Obviously, when you have a meeting midweek, I think we had it Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, and I arrived there Thursday afternoon. Some people came on other nights, and some people came on other nights. But Gustavo's there in the middle, his wife right next to him, and then several members that come. The woman on the far right, actually, she's from Brazil, you know, but she speaks Spanish and Portuguese, so you can communicate, but obviously they have accents when they try to speak Spanish, just like, you know, I would have an accent when trying to speak Spanish. But again, they meet in their garage, so they have to pull their vehicle out, which is just motorcycles and a motorcycle and a moped. They pull that out, and they set up their garage for the service, you know. And then this was me. I preached on several different nights there. On the left, obviously, was on a Sunday. You can see the Lord's Supper there. A lot of places in South America, they actually have the Lord's Supper on Sunday night, as opposed to Sunday morning. They have their service at night, and they typically only have one service, you know. But there's also a lot fewer members, a lot fewer people you have to accommodate for. But extremely, extremely kind to me, made a really good impression on me. Definitely want me to come back and visit. I definitely want to go back and visit, maybe live, we'll see. But extremely kind, we had a lot of biblical discussions. That was so great, is when you can get down, immerse yourself in the language so you can communicate with these people without using a translator. You can have such a more intimate conversation about the matters of God. It's really, really a cool blessing. So just a summary in closing. It was an extremely successful trip. I learned a lot. I grew a lot. I was able to learn how to use a lot of different scriptures. My memorization, I had always thought memorizing a lot of scripture would be difficult. But when you get out there and you use it a lot, you memorize it automatically. I wasn't even trying to, and you will learn the more you use stuff in practice, you know, it'll be easy to memorize. Take somebody with you. Go in pairs. Go with your spouse, or go with some other friend who knows more than you do or less than you do. Help other people too. Everybody should be willing to teach. It's not just the preacher's job or my job or the elder's job to get out there and teach people. It's every person's responsibility to go out and teach people. We had 10 baptisms overall. We had 6 in Buenos Aires, which actually started their own church. They're meeting in that house. At first, they were a little uncomfortable, like, we can meet in a house? And we showed them the examples in the New Testament. And then we had 4 back in Vision Mercedes. And we have still a whole lot of contacts, and more contacts every day, because I translate the reports, and they're always sending me their reports, so I get to literally read everything that's going down in South America, so I can keep up to date and also help them out in translating them to English, which is really nice. We had 6 to 8 young people study, about 3 or 4 in each town I went to. And I preached a lot, a lot more than last time, which was nice. I enjoy the home Bible studies. I like home Bible studies a lot. Everybody's good at different things. And for me, that I just enjoyed them, and I thought we could be more effective in that role. But I still preached a lot. And, you know, all of it's for the glory of God. It's not about me. It's not about David. It's not about Jorge. It's, you know, it's about the souls being saved. It's about the people that we can bring to the knowledge of the truth. And, you know, all the success up here is also attributed to you all, you know. You guys were all directly related and working in this. So you guys were participants in that. We see that in the Bible, no? When people and different churches helped Paul. So you all are all to be commended for that as well. And also the elders had asked me to ask David if he would be willing to, you know, have people come down and actually be there, because a lot of people, they're trying to get people involved in traveling abroad and teaching and participating in that. And he said, invitation is open. So if you can speak Spanish, his house is open. You can go down and stay with him, work with him. They have a ton of work. They need a lot more workers down there. My future plans, Lord willing, if I can graduate in May, which is an if, but if I can graduate, I'm planning on moving down there if I can get my visa lined up. It's a lot of things that accumulate. And work down there and then preach on the side, because they just need as many people available that can go abroad. And that's one of the things Bob Buchanan talks about, how the United States has 5% of the world's populace and 95% of the world's preachers. You know, that's one of the reasons we're so blessed. But also, you know, we have that responsibility to go out and spread the word to all nations and help others out. So I hope this report has been encouraging. You all have been extremely encouraging and supportive of me, and I just want to, again, thank you all for that. If you want to know anything more about these reports or these trips, or you want to become involved, that I'm all for that. I will support you and help you and get the contacts you need And if you wait till after I graduate in May, you can come down and just stay with me. And so, and I can take you around and you can visit different churches and go to Bible studies, and then it'll be all great. So, I don't ever want to finish a sermon without extending the Lord's invitation. We haven't looked at Bible verses tonight. We've been giving a report on different things we've done in South America. But the Lord's invitation is always open, whether it's in South America, Argentina, Uruguay, Brazil, United States, other continents, it doesn't matter. The Lord's invitation is the same. That's one of the things that's so encouraging. This Bible that I use down there, this isn't Spanish, but it's the same thing that we read in English. The same thing. It doesn't change from one language to another. It's just like mathematics. 2 + 2 is here in Australia and Japan, China, and anywhere you go, 2 + 2 is going to be 4. That's how the Word of God is. It's unchanging. His plan is the same. And His plan is that, Jesus was sent to the earth to die for people who had sinned, who were lost in sin, who had no chance of bridging that gap between us and God. And if we respond to Him through repentance, through baptism, through the confession of our sins, and then we have to live faithfully, we have to run that race, which is easier said than done, but that's why we have each other. That's why we can continue to uphold and push forward. That's one of the options, well, not the options, that's one of the responsibilities and, one of the things the church has to do. So if we can help you in any way, even if it's prayers, please make your request known as we stand and as we sing.